The foundation for the extension had been completed, and the task in front of the workforce and the companions was to construct the one-story building and insulate the interior walls of the storage space, so that any fire in the interior could be contained, and an exterior fire wouldn't be able to penetrate the walls and ignite the fuel stores. Wags from Salvation had carried out the building materials needed, a salvaged amalgam of brick, cinder block, sheets of metal, and some sand and cement that could be mixed with some of the precious water in order to meld the whole together. The insulating materials were salvaged from old buildings and were carefully wrapped to prevent the asbestos in the mix from spreading dust into the air. Crow directed the companions to their tasks. Ryan and JB were to help lay the cinder block outer walls, while Dean, Jack, and Doc were to assist in the building of the interior walls and the installation of the insulation. Mildred and Christy were spared the heavier work and were to mix the concrete. When JB asked how Baron Silas Hunter had amassed an amount of something that was simply no longer made, Crow informed him that one of the vills that were investing in the Baron's scheme had an old cement works within its boundaries, and the supplies for all the wag stops on the route had been plundered from those bags that hadn't been split or had leaked over the past century, and had so gone hard.
"It was tight, but I reckon as how we've got enough."
"You're an expert?"
"I make sure I know what's going on if I'm to do my job properly. I went to the works to assess what was there, and checked up in some old pre-dark building manuals that Baron Silas had acquired. He's a thorough man."
Crow's last comment seemed heavy with hidden threat. The Native Americans putting Mildred and Christy under the concrete mixing wasn't a gesture toward their sex, but rather a shrewd move, which Ryan appreciated, to forestall the need for them to shed too many clothes through exertion in the heat. If they stayed fully clothed and away from the main body of the workers, then there would be less chance of conflict between Ryan's people and Crow's workforce. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be that simple.
"Say, boy, have you learned what it's like to be a man yet?"
Dean stopped with a brick poised over a line of mortar. He and the workman Reich were laying the internal brick wall separating the fuel store from the food and water store.
"Just what exactly do you mean? I've chilled my fair share and traveled a long way."
Reich shrugged.
"Chilling's just a way of life, boy. I mean, have you ever had any pussy?"
Dean blushed despite himself and felt the eyes of both Reich and Anderson on him. The heavy-set dark workman pushed the point home.
"Hellfire, Reich. Just look at the boy, blushing hot as a forest fire. He's been there with them."
Reich winked.
"And I'll bet they're good. They'd have to be with those five boys to keep happy."
"Don't know about the old guy. He don't look like he can keep it up enough."
Dean tried to keep his voice as even as possible.
"I know what you're trying to do, but it's not going to work. There's no way that you'll get anything out of Christy and Mildred, and we sure as hell aren't going to fight you over it."
"You saying you a virgin then, boy?"
"That's my business. But it's not like that with Mildred and Christy."
Reich looked closely at Dean's hand, at how the brick was trembling in the boy's grip. He decided to push it further.
"I reckon as how those gaudies could pull the train for us when we finish the wag stop. What do you think, Anderson?"
The comment fulfilled its purpose. Dean swung around, the brick still in his grasp, and following through in a roundhouse punch that would have caved in Reich's skull at the temple. If the workman hadn't been prepared for the action and had already moved away from the arc of the blow. As one man sidestepped, so the other moved in. Anderson ducked underneath and aimed a giant fist at Dean's solar plexus, which had been left exposed by his stance. On anyone else, the movement would have been quick enough to catch the victim in the guts. But Dean Carter was quicker than that, and twisted his body in mid-flight, avoiding the blow and somehow managing to keep his balance. Doc saw this from the far side of the building's interior, where he and Jack were erecting the metal sheeting walls that would delineate the sleeping quarters. He was facing the scene, while Jack had his back turned, although both had heard the beginnings of the altercation.
"Jack?"
Anderson flailed and fell forward as the momentum of his blow took him past Dean. The boy was having similar problems, however, as the momentum of his initial swing, combined with the effort to avoid Anderson's attack, had left him off balance and open to an attack from Reich. The blonde workman had a bloodthirsty twinkle in his eye and was smiling savagely as he raised the trowel he had been using for smoothing the mortar Dean laid bricks upon. Dean was falling toward him and was unable to defend himself in time as Reich drew back his arm to land a blow. But the smile was wiped from his face and replaced by a surprised and puzzled frown as an iron grip stayed his arm, steel-tight fingers gripping his forearm and making his fingers tingle and go numb as the blood supply was cut off. He turned to find that Jack had hold of him. Despite the fact that the albino stood several inches shorter than the blonde and was looking up at him, he seemed to swell in Reich's vision and fill the room. Jack's scarred face was impassive, his eyes glittering hard. For a fraction of a second, the two men were still. But before the blonde had a chance to act, he felt rather than saw the heel of Jack's other hand as it drove into his face, angled upward and catching him beneath his nostrils, pushing the flesh and bone of his nose up into his head, the pressure forcing his head backward. His head snapped back in agony and he lost his balance, falling backward and dropping the trowel as Jack released his grip. Dean was still regaining his balance as Anderson swung back toward him. He felt sure he could balance before the big man came for him, but it was unnecessary as Doc stepped forward, clutching a baton that held together the metal sheeting. That was the intended function of the long wooden pole, but Doc drove it into the stomach of the workman, the point hitting home and doubling him over, air driven from his lungs.
Boys, you know I don't want any of this.
The five men stopped, staring toward what would be the main entrance to the extension, where the impassive Crow stood watching them.
Just keep working, and we'll all be happy.
Then, he simply left.
Shit! I know that this is supposed to be easier and keep us from having to strip off and inflame the passions of these poor boys, but I really wish they would put some shade over this bastard. And it's so damn loud!
Mildred shoveled another spadeful of sand into the cement mixer. The pre-dark relic was turning erratically, but enough to mix the concrete that was needed for the construction. The generator that powered it was coughing and spluttering, an ancient relic that was among the treasures amassed by Baron Silas to fulfill his ambition. Next to Mildred, Christy tipped another bucket of water into the drum of the mixer.
I'm not one to complain as a rule, but I think you may just have a point. There is one thing, though.
Mildred wiped the sweat from her brow.
What's that?
I'd love to know where this Baron got all this stuff.
Christy put the bucket down and joined Mildred at the side of the drum. They both watched the mix blend inside until it acquired a smooth texture that was thick and goopy.
Looks done to me.
I wouldn't know. This is one thing I can truly say I've never had to do before.
I must have spent a good part of my childhood doing this. My father was a great one for what we used to call DIY. Back before Skydark, there were a lot of people who liked to build and improve their homes as a hobby, and my father was one. Lord, the house always seemed to be like a building site.
Christy shook her head.
You know, sometimes the more I hear, the weirder the world sounds before the new cost. It gets hard to imagine.
I guess you just had to be there.
Mildred decided to change the subject.
Guess this looks done.
She switched off the mixer and tilted the drum so that the mix spilled out onto a board laid in front of the mixer. The generator calmed down now that it wasn't called on to power the mixer, and as that machine had now fallen silent, a relative calm fell over the site. Hal came across to them, pushing a small cart with a shovel at the side. He joined the two women in shoveling the concrete onto the cart. There was a strained silence between them, which Christy attempted to break.
How's the work going?
From the way Hal looked at her, she immediately knew that it was a mistake.
Going well so far, as long as you don't hold us up by not working quick enough.
You got any complaints yet?
Not yet, but it's only the first day, right?
So what's the problem?
Hal stopped shoveling and looked her up and down.
Ladies, you are, 'cause that's what you is.
This puzzled Mildred.
Say what?
Ladies, you sure as shit ain't men.
Well, 10 out of 10 for observation, dumbass. So what the hell does that have to do with anything?
Hal looked at her in amazement.
Shit, girl. Does having a pussy make you stoop or something? You ain't gonna be able to keep up the pace, are you? And if you keep mixing slower and slower, it takes longer and longer to get the wag stop built. 'Cause you got the crucial task, right?
Yeah, I can see that, but that don't matter shit, does it? We didn't ask for it.
That don't matter none. We're on good bonuses to get this stop built real quick. and we was on target for a real big bonus. You see, we's all been out here a long time now, and we ain't had no pussy. That's all there is to think about out here, especially when there ain't none. So the thing we all want is to get the